Yes, you are now listening to the sound of Sports Reports is Ordered. And just because I love y'all, I'm suffering in this heat. No AC, y'all, but I do it for you. But I don't do it alone because I got with me the world famous, the world renowned. He was born in Texas, raised in VA. And now he represents everything New Jerus. And he still won't let go of the Nets. He still got his Nets jerseys popping.
Absolutely. Come back to the Prudential Center.
Mr. Logical. And all he asks is that you don't bring feelings to a fact fight.
Don't do it.
And then, of course, coming to you live from the Alamo is your unorthodox statistician, Gordon. Left so much, you thought I was southpaw, to the point that RG3 don't even look my way because he know what's coming. We are not the same, though our women may be. I am. Tonight, we got finals previews. We're going to talk about some awards and our thoughts on them. We're going to talk about Tom Thibodeau, fired by Karl Anthony Towns again. Sports Reports is Ordered. Like, review, subscribe, share, rate, do all the free things. Do all the good things, and you better have a liquid death in your hand. So let's get right to it. And this time, I'm going to remember to hit the topic on the first topic this time.
Got it.
So, Mr. Logical, on Thursday night, it is going down in the Sooner State. Shout out to Solutions Over Excuses. You know, it's going down in the Sooner State. The Indiana Pacers are coming through. And I was looking at these odds, Mr. Logical. The Pacers are plus 500. So that means that if they were to win this series, the only other team that had odds this low were the Pistons in 2004.
Yeah, I saw that. I saw, so plus 500 means you bet $100 to win 500. Mm-hmm. So you'll get $600 back. So I think it's a good bet. I mean, with those kind of odds, I'm pretty sure if Tim Donaghy was still out here making these calls, that'd be a hell of a bet. But he still got right. Scott Foster in the league, allegedly. That's, you know, it's his cohort. But we're not going to talk into that. We don't want to get sued before we get a sponsor.
Oh, so that was the first thing I was going to bring up, actually.
But I don't know. It feels a lot like the Heat Mavericks 2011, where people are calling it inevitable. And one of the key players in that was Rick Carlisle as a head coach.
Mm-hmm.
You've been on the Indiana train longer than any pundit. I remember before we even did our first round preview, I think before we finished that episode, you said something like Cleveland's going down the second round to Indiana anyway, but we'll talk about that later. I hadn't heard that conversation. And a lot of people have been, I don't know if people are watching our show, but it seems like you had a January 1st till April stat about how they were second best record in the league. Yep, I'm hearing that a lot lately over the last few days, as you know. Because I like to watch the shows to ensure that I don't say the exact same thing so it doesn't look like I'm taking their information. Because, you know, you formulate your opinion as you're watching the game. Me and you have been doing the show for 2.5 years. So I'm always thinking of, like, how do I generate conversation with Mike in regards to this topic? Or how do we give a new perspective to it? So I do watch these other shows. But like I said, a lot of stats are information you brought up. I don't see it as a foregone conclusion that OKC just dominates the series, considering they were pushed to game 7 by Denver. They had some good games against Minnesota. They had the one game they won by 2 with the fan caught the ball. There should have been 0.6 seconds on the clock, in my opinion. I don't know how they came up with 0.3, but it was clear that the fan caught the ball at 0.6, but they got 0.3. 0.6 and 0.3 is a different. That's a different kind of shot. Maybe you get a miracle three. And then they got blown out that one game because Minnesota shot the lights out.
Right.
Indiana also has been like the heartbreak kids where they just came back like gangbusters at the end of games, where it's like I said, 7 minutes left in the game against the Knicks. I went to sleep. I'm like, this is over. And they won it. They stole the game in Cleveland. So it just, they are like the heart attack kids there. So it could be a toss up. I know they were mentioning, I believe it was Stephen A. Smith on First Take. I watched this clip. Very level headed analysis today. So I'm going to give a shout out to SAS. But what he said was that the OKC defenders are just a little bigger. And they've been defending bigger players this entire playoff run. So guys like Nembhard, Nesmith, Mathurin are going to have to deal with defenders that are used to just playing bigger offensive threats. So that could cause some more problems for Indiana. But, you know, you get a guy that's already has the confidence that he knocked down the most threes in the fourth quarter in NBA history. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure that confidence didn't go anywhere. So.
Right. So this is the way that I look at it. I do agree with you that it's not a foregone conclusion that Oklahoma City's just going to walk away with the series, but Oklahoma City's just going to walk away with this series. Like, it don't got to be a foregone conclusion to be a fact. But before we even get into that, how the hell did we get the Cleveland Browns back before the Seattle Supersonics?
Man, we know football is king. The Seattle Supersonics not coming back. They're too far west.
They coming back. You know what I'm saying?
If Portland got better ratings, I would see the Seattle Supersonics coming back. But the only show out west that north is Golden State. LA is going to be LA. They're going to get play everywhere. But
Seattle,
if Portland's not popping, you're not getting Seattle back.
Seattle is one of the foundational basketball cities in this country. Yeah, it's coming back.
Back when foundational meant, you know, generational, that meant something you kept around. Now foundational is considered old. Now we want new transcendent.
Well, and I want my money back because the Cleveland Browns are worse than the original Cleveland Browns.
But we love football.
You know what I'm saying? But anyway, so look, SGA, two games against Indiana this year, 39-8-7. That's not my takeaway from those two games, Mr. Logical. My takeaway is that Chet didn't play in either one of them. So I'm sitting there and I'm trying to look at this, you know, and look, don't get me wrong. I love me some Tyrese Halliburton. You know what I'm saying? I've been banging the drum on how underrated Pascal Siakam is, and especially from the finals that they had in Toronto.
Oh, that's gone the complete opposite way now. Now it's one more championships. He's in the Hall of Fame. So that's how quickly your fortunes can change in the modern media.
Draymond Green still talks about how Pascal is one of the guys that he respects because of that series where he averaged 20-8, you know, and made in game one against Draymond, he went 14-17 in that series. So I'm all here for the Pacers to make some noise, you know, say, what up, Mike? You know what I'm saying? But the thing is, if it was a one-off,
what's going on,
sure,
Mike?
Sure, I would give Indiana a fighting chance, but you got to beat them full times. And back to what you said about, hey, they went 7 with Denver. Let's get into that a little bit. So Indiana, true to their name, they're the Pacers. They set the pace. They run up and down the court. You know who got the best transition defense in the NBA?
Probably the Oklahoma City Thunder.
Oklahoma City Thunder. So the
just
reason
because they're young and fast, so it's like they just Coach Carter style.
So the reason that Denver was able to go to Game 7 is because Denver's one of the few teams in the league that can score in the half court against Oklahoma City. You know, and they have the big man who controls everything and lets everybody else roam. In the Pacers scenario, you got the little guy, Halliburton, doing all the dancing and dribbling.
Steve Nash style.
Yeah, and you know, and the other problem is that we appreciate you, bro. You know what I'm saying? The other thing is that Halliburton has these moments. Like, everybody was shocked by game 5 where he only took the 7 shots. This is what he does. He has these moments, and that's why I refuse at this point to call him a superstar. But the one thing I will say about the Indiana Pacers, they do have the genius known as Rick Carlisle who gave us the defensive strategy of just put J.J. Barrera on LeBron, and it'll all work out just fine.
Yeah, that's why I pointed to that 2011 – that's as a LeBron fan, and I don't even want to use the word advocate, but like I'll debate anybody's merits in regards to LeBron and his career and so forth. That's the only one I don't have an argument for. I think everything else I can articulate an argument for, that's the only one. So does Rick Carlisle have another one of those?
Right.
And we said this before. I mentioned it in regards to Jokic, Steve Nash, even James Harden. Do you just let SGA go bananas?
I think you have to.
Do you let him go 43 and 45 rebounds and only 3 assists?
I think you have to because, you know, like I said, 39-8-7, right, against Indiana this season. The problem with OKC when it comes to trying to figure out how to beat them is that they don't even need SGA to go off to beat you. You know what I mean? The same way that Denver doesn't
cement it in their role, and there's not a single player that gets solid minutes that has a liability in their game. Like we talked about, you know, the series with Minnesota where Ant has to shoot a lot. That's the liability. Is like he's gonna shoot the ball a lot, and if he's not hot, it could, you know, not work out. Julius Randle likes to shoot, but if he's cold, it's not much else that he gives you. Same thing with like DiVincenzo. I feel like OKC, a lot of their guys just know, like, this is what I do, and I do it well. Lou Dort is like, listen, I'm going to play defense all game, and then in the third and fourth quarter, I'm going to put up about 4 to 5 threes, maybe go 2 for 5, maybe 3 for 5 if we're lucky. But for the most part, I'm going to play defensively and then hit timely shots when I'm open when they start collapsing on SGA. I just think that if you have a strategy, I think on the offensive end, because there's guys that are good. But besides Chet and SGA, I'm not sure how many guys truly create their own points off the dribble. I think a lot of guys play with great confidence, and they're really good catch and shoot guys.
Right.
But I don't know how many guys with SGA on the floor
will get the ball
and then like create. When he's off the floor, those guys just play. But when he's on the floor, if you stay glued to him and you don't let him, he does get fouled and he does sell it, but he sells it like he's so big you don't notice he got bumped. Like Giannis has to sell it when he gets hit, even though he doesn't. He just keeps going. LeBron has to sell it. Even to some degree, a guy like Melo back in the day would have to sell it because, you know, he's 6'8", 240. But SGA doesn't have to sell the foul. That's why it looks so over the top. But he's getting hit. Like, well,
I'm glad you brought that up because I was going to bring up the referees in this series. Are the referees going to allow OKC to roughhouse? I think OKC is going through their Legion of Boom phase right now where they have a reputation of being a great defense, so you get a little extra perks, the same way that a guy like Michael Jordan or, you know, Kobe Bryant get certain calls where you barely touch them and they're shooting free throws. So OKC has the reverse of that if the referees so choose to allow that. You know, on the flip hand side, for Indiana to win this series, Mr. Logical, I'm no math teacher, but it comes down to simple arithmetic. Indiana is shooting 41% from three as a team in these playoffs, as a team. Correct. So they need to win these three-point battles 17-8, 19-10. So they just have to outscore Oklahoma City from three. If it's within three three-pointers, Oklahoma City has a great chance to win these games. So but Indiana has to
because
shoot
them with out. That being the case, that means because they're getting a lot of dribble drives and kickouts. Like I said, OKC doesn't have a lot of guys that create open three-point shots. You know, it's a lot of catch-and-shoot guys. I think Indiana, a lot of their guys dribble into threes. You got Nesmith. He's, you know, comes off the pick and roll, shoots threes. Halliburton, we saw with Cat, was playing drop coverage for some reason on the pick and roll when they were switching.
It's like which he wasn't supposed to be doing.
No, if you're going to switch it, like, I'd rather him, if I'm calling the Towns, I'd rather at least be above the three-point line and have him blow by you versus being inside the three-point line and he just sets up and looks at the rim and takes two more dribbles and then shoots that set shot three. So if they're jumping out on those kind of plays with Halliburton, then maybe it slows him down. But I think Mathurin's playing with a lot of confidence. I think Siakam, obviously coming off the Eastern Conference MVP, he's playing with a lot of confidence. I think Miles Turner just being the big. Indiana played like 11 guys, significant minutes. They played three bigs, Mathurin, Nesmith.
Which negates OKC's strength in numbers.
Yeah, you got Shepherd. They were getting a lot of run.
McConnell.
And then Nimhard. Then McConnell was just steady as they go. So, I don't know. I feel like the series is going to be more competitive than some of the pundits that I heard.
Yeah, because, I mean, if you go back to, 2007, that Cavalier Finals against the Spurs, you look back at it, you look at the record, it was a sweep. But there were two games in that series that Cleveland was within 2 minutes of pulling off an upset, and we got a 2-2 series. So it's that simple. So, yes, I think OKC is going to win the series as far as OKC's winning this series. But I don't think they're just going to blow out the Pacers the way that they did Minnesota or that they did Denver at times. But Indiana also has something that we didn't talk about yet. They have what people thought Minnesota was supposed to have. They got the third leading shot blocker in the NBA, Miles Turner. And he's going to give you headaches on the offensive end as well that Rudy Gobert couldn't give you. So that could be a new look for OKC. And that's the thing, because both of these teams are playing teams that are different than the teams that they beat in the playoffs. Because when you go back and look at Indiana, they faced more star-centric teams. Giannis, Jalen Brunson, Donovan Mitchell. Like, I mean, not necessarily Giannis, but the other two being ball chuckers. You know what I'm saying? Pause, I guess. But,
yeah.
You know what I'm saying? But at the same time, OKC, when you look at it, they played who we got here. They played Memphis. So, a team that likes to get out and run. They don't necessarily shoot it the best, but they like to get out and run. They played Denver, who was that slow it down. Jokic is going to back you down, set up the offense. And then they play the star-centric Ant. So now they're playing against a team that I don't want to go hyperbole and say that they remind me of the Spurs, but they play more like the Spurs than they do the Timberwolves.
They play a lot of five-man basketball to where sometimes you look and it felt like Halliburton was shooting too many shots, but then you'll see they close out on him. And he's throwing that no-look pass down low to Nimhard, Nesmith for like an easy layup.
Right.
So I think they play the way teams should play. The Knicks, and that was part of the reason why, like I talked about the Knicks against Indiana, is that I didn't think, and I don't think a lot of teams do this because I talk about it all the time. I don't think enough teams play 10 guys. You have to have five as an NBA.
I mean, Tibbs tried it at the end of the series.
At the end, but I'm talking about throughout the season. Like,
right.
You have your starting five. There's no way you have a 12 to 15-man roster and you can't get five more out of those additional 7 to 10 players to get in your rotation. So these teams that are playing 7, 8 guys and 9 is a stretch, it was going to hurt them in the playoffs. Like I said, Indiana was playing 11 guys. They're playing 3 bigs. Mathurin, except the one game where he got kicked out at the beginning against Cleveland. Yeah. He gives you good minutes.
And that's OKC what we were talking
does
about.
The same thing. They give you good minutes. That hurt the Knicks because it was like it came down to it. You had three scrappy guys on the floor and OG, Mikal Bridges, and Josh Hart. And then your scoring or your play calls were for Jalen Brunson and Cat. So I'm Rick Carlisle. I can either play Brunson tough until the refs start calling fouls, or I make Carl Anthony Towns keep catching the ball at the top of the key and exhaust himself dribbling to the hoop, trying to get through these three bigs that I'm throwing at him all game long. And it worked.
And that's what we were talking about, when we were previewing game 6, I guess. For the Knicks to come back and win that series, Brunson and Cat had to both be what they were in game 5 every time with no deviation. There's no, hey, you had a bad quarter, or hey, like, you know, a bad hat. You can't do it. And that's what the Pacers are facing right now with Pascal, in my opinion, with Pascal Siakam. Pascal Siakam has to be at his very best throughout this series. Like, you can't take a playoff, you can't take a quarter off, because this team doesn't take long to bury you.
But I think Pascal Siakam, the way he plays and the way he impacts the game, feels organic. It feels dependable. It feels like, if I'm Rick Carlisle, I could put Pascal out there. I'm getting 18 points. I'm getting
former Laker.
I'm getting 6 or 7 rebounds. I'm getting a few assists. I'm getting defensive plays, like he stripped the ball from Mikal Bridges and got the layup. Or I'm going to get a barrage where he's going to give me 24 to 30 points because he shoots from the outside. He shoots the pull up. It's no predictability in, like, defending him other than, like, you're going to have to defend him everywhere. And when you are being defended by him, he's going to play smart. We talked about Cat with the dumb fouls. I don't think Siakam had a dumb foul.
So is Chet going to get that assignment to start out?
On Siakam?
Yeah.
I wouldn't.
I figure Hartenstein goes on Turner. Maybe Dort?
Dort would...
And then you just have...
Do you put SGA on Siakam and then put Dort on Halliburton?
I don't know, because then you got to find somebody to put on... like, not that he's like a super threat, but Nesmith can get loose in that scenario.
Well, I think that's where you just put Jay Will.
Or maybe somebody like Nembhard becomes the Harrison Barnes of this series, where... If you just go 4 for 12, we can win these games. And, you know, so my question about this that I actually wrote down was, can Nembhard out Caruso? You know, that's going to be a big experience, part of
this too. That's the thing. Caruso, he's a savvy vet. And I think Caruso steps on the floor and he says, the next 6 defensive possessions, I want to make an impact play. And I think he'll look at every trip up and down the court like, I want to make an impact defensively. And I think he'll play the game through that lens, and then the ball will find you. You tip enough passes, you get enough passing lanes, you close out on a 3 that gets missed, and you get a tip block on the 3 and you get the run out, and you get the layup. So he'll get his 3-point opportunities off the run, but I think he'll approach the game of like, how do I impact this game defensively? Because we know players that don't do that. Like, they don't come onto the floor thinking like, hey, what can I do defensively to make an impact on this game that's going to turn the offense? So he's one of those players. And like I say, crafty vet, been around the league.
And let me do a quick PSA. For all of you out there that don't make no money off the NBA, talking about ratings and markets and how bad it's going to be, it's okay if you don't watch. Just shut the fuck up, because we don't care and we don't want to hear it. Just suffer in silence if you got the internet.
The internet's literally everywhere. You can watch this game. It doesn't matter if you've ever been to Indiana or Oklahoma.
And not only that, but I mean, I'm happy. Like, you know, this is the first final since 2006 that we're going to get a first-time champion. This is the first finals since they instituted the luxury tax back in 2003 that neither team is in the luxury tax. This is how you're supposed to build teams. These teams are the epitome of what we tell the small markets to do. Because people like me, we've had this argument where, hey, ain't nobody going to sign with them. Ain't nobody going to do this. Ain't nobody going to do that. Well, hey, OKC said, look at what we just did. Indiana said, like, oh, yeah.
It's probably one team in the NBA that probably won't get a big free agent signing, and it's not
the Utah Jazz.
It's just Salt Lake. It's just Salt Lake City. NBA players just don't rock with it. But I
don't know, man. Like, Utah might get Cooper Flagg on his second contract. You know, he's from Maine.
They'll bet the farm to get him. But Giannis is not beating the table to get shipped out to Utah.
Shout out to Danny Ainge.
Salt Lake City is a great city. Utah is a great state. We talk about it all the time. But yeah, this small market, because for me, we talk about, and part of my argument is that LeBron played in a small market. Paul George started out in Indiana. Reggie Miller's a legend. Chicago's a big market, but it's not. People don't know how high up on the I think they're third as far as populations by city.
They are.
I think people just know Chicago because of Jordan. So it feels small market in the in a basketball sense, even though like nationally it is the third largest market. Dallas is a large one, but they can fall into oblivion. So is Houston. Is this a matter of like, how do you perform? How do you perform when the opportunity is there? And I think these teams that gave you the blueprint, I have a feeling we're going to talk, they're going to talk a lot about Giannis moving this summer and KD and maybe Steph and Draymond and all these old vets moving. A lot of those guys are past the prime to where a large percentage of the league is going to want them. A guy like Jaylen Brown, but Boston's still kind of locked in. Giannis might be that piece to where Milwaukee can look at Indiana and they can look at OKC and say, hey, both of these teams traded Paul George.
There is hope for us.
We can make that kind of move. Maybe a team like, I was thinking about this earlier. Talking about like, I think there's only going to be a few teams that have that dynamic duo. So you're going to go Boston with their two-headed monster. Give me
the Knicks.
The Knicks with their two guys. Cleveland with their two guys. LA with their two guys. I'll give you Phoenix with KD and Devin Booker as of right now. Bradley Beal seems to be on the outs. I imagine they're going to get a partner.
Yeah, I think him and KD are out.
If you think about Giannis, well, Dame is out, but if Dame was an injury. So it's a lot of teams that are going to have like AD and Kyrie when they're back. But because they're two-headed monsters, one of these guys missing changed the whole dynamic of your team. I think more NBA teams should look at what Indiana and what OKC are doing right now. Yeah, OKC is going to give SGA $380 million. But he's been there for 6 years from a trade that they got for Paul George. Orlando needs to look at something like, hey, do we need to burn this whole thing down? Or do we need to
burn those new uniforms they put out today and that logo?
Yeah, it definitely should have been workshopped a little bit more. But, you know, our team's just going to go, you know what, maybe we don't need to sign the big free agent. Maybe we need to move our most expensive piece right now, like Washington and Jordan Poole. I think he'd be a great sixth man on a contender.
Oh, I think that's coming.
So you move him and then you build around hopefully what you get as a young star. Keep in mind, they traded Vlade Divac to get Kobe. Like no one knew. And he was like at 13 overall or something like that.
Yeah.
It was like sometimes you just got to hope that your guy develops. SGA, Kobe.
And OKC's got another top 15 pick this year, you know, or mid first round pick. And then you got my last thing here. For Indiana, if Indiana wants to win this series, they got to take advantage of the moments because Mark Dagenault keeps on playing with this fire, trying to follow up three, and then his guy missed the free throws. We saw it burn him against Denver with the Aaron Gordon shot. You know, they almost got burned again in that game against Minnesota that you brought up earlier. So, you know, the thing about it is that Indiana has shown us in these playoffs, they do very improbable, miraculous things, especially when the clock
gets low. They can go video game cheat code out of nowhere. Yeah.
So I'm taking OKC in six. You know, I think that it could go seven, to be honest with you. Or in the same vein, I think it could be a sweep.
It could go five.
It could be either way. But I'm going to give Indiana game three at home when they first get to Indiana. And I'm going to give Indiana some weird game that they should not win.
I don't want to just agree, but I also don't want to pick just because I picked OKC all year. That was my OKC versus Boston. Boston's out. So it's like I got to, you know, pick integrity. OKC in six. I'll go conservative and say OKC in six. But it wouldn't surprise me if they went back to Indiana 1-1. That changes things, but it wouldn't surprise me.
It would be interesting if it was still 2-3-2.
You go like this. You got Indiana just beat the Knicks the second year in a row. They've had probably the most improbable playoff run that we can imagine, like without doing like some extensive Elias data research, just us watching basketball. Their run, some of these end of the game plays that they've made as a team, not just like one guy going off, like just as a team multiple times. And they just got the Knicks coach fired. They went into New York, a hostile environment, won a couple games, quieted the crowd. We're
going to talk about that.
They got the coach fired. I mean, the momentum they can be riding, OKC's been chilling. They had a relatively limited stress. I won't say easy because it's NBA, but their stress level against Minnesota, because you think about it, that game where they got blown out, it was like, all right, cool. We're done. Like, I'm mentally checked out of, what was that, game three?
Yeah.
So it's like, all right, we're up 2-0. So you're sitting your starters for the rest of, so that everyone's chilling. Everyone's well-rested. They just were like, all right, this game's over. So it didn't even, like, stress them mentally because it's like, okay, we can't do anything about this ass kicking it. Like, these dudes are shooting, like, 60% from three. It's a wrap. We'll deal with it. And you could tell how they battled back in games four and five is that game three didn't adversely affect them. So,
well, I
maybe
mean,
they're just a little lax.
They've won every game following a loss in these playoffs. So that's a good sign. You know, I think that if it was 2-3-2, this would be really interesting. But the only reason
I'm glad they got rid of 2-3-2.
The only reason that I don't think that it'll be 1-1 is because of what happened against Denver. I think OKC is just, especially, I mean,
they got two extra days off from a very, like I said, they're like iron sharpens iron. I think Indiana kind of being battle tested, even with the miraculous stuff, but playing New York, a tough, gritty team, beating them up, and they're a fast-paced team. They're not really a big team, but them playing the way they played, I think they can carry that momentum. And it, like I said, it wouldn't surprise me if they took game one. But like I said, I'm predicting 1-1 going back to Indiana.
Okay. All right. So Pascal Siakam, you know, Eastern Conference Finals MVP. You know, this is second year in a row.
Right now here looking like Drewski.
Yeah, second year in a row that the Eastern Conference Finals comes with some kind of controversy, I guess, if you want to call it that. So what are your thoughts on these awards? Like, is it too much? You like them? Like, don't really care?
If it was the 20th year they were doing this, because if you think about Magic, Larry, because the awards are named that, so it's Magic Johnson in the West,
mm-hmm.
Larry Bird in the East.
Mm-hmm.
Those guys retired, stopped playing basketball, like 92, 92, so, yeah. You know, 94 at the latest. They were legends of the game then. I feel like if the award was that old and you've had some of the legends, AI, Kobe, LeBron, D. Wade, Shaq, all these legends that played through the 90s, if they had an opportunity to get that, earn that award, because like I said, Larry Bird and Matt Johnson were legends then, it would be better because now I don't want to hear, you know, this guy has two Western Conference Finals MVPs and, you know, he's got to be top 10 of your list. I just feel like we do too many of these lists and adding this award at the end is like, well, not the end, but like the eye of this top 10 list storm. Appreciate it, Mike. I just feel like that's just going to add fuel to fire. Case in point, earlier today I heard is Pascal Siakam headed to the Hall of Fame because that'd give him two All-NBAs, three All-Stars, two championships, and one Eastern Conference Finals MVP. So it's like, I don't like that conversation. So I think the awards are going to kind of lean into that. SGA, is he having the greatest season by a guard ever?
I've heard that today.
So, and
the answer is no.
That award is like another feather in his cap. So it's like, I just feel like the award, it makes the conversation so hyperbolic that it's like, okay. And then coupled with the fact that last year, it could have easily gone to Jason Tatum. And then it was used as a potential divisive talking point for the 4 or 5 days before the finals started. And then they go into the finals, and then Jaylen Brown wins finals MVP. And it was spewed into the offseason. It was like, there was no joy. Like, no one celebrated the dominance of Boston over Dallas. It just was this conversation about these two awards. And I just feel like that it's another thing that these TV shows can use to kind of cheapen the efforts of these guys who, yes, they're playing a kid's game, but they're playing at such a high level. I think more positive and enlightening conversations come from, and I think the awards just kind of dumb it down.
So I like them just from the standpoint of, I think that, and I'm not necessarily accusing you of this, even though you just said all the things that you just said, but yeah. I think that people think that tradition has to start 100 years ago. You know, there's always room to start new traditions. You know what I mean? We always talk about how the newer players don't get certain credit that a lot of people feel that they deserve. You know, oh, you stuck in the past, old school, you know, these new players are better, all that kind of stuff. So I think this is just a way to recognize that, you know, to recognize them as far as Jaylen Brown's not close to Michael Jordan on any scale besides height. You know what I mean? Right. But at the same time, like, if that award didn't exist, and let's just say Jason Tatum would have won the NBA Finals MVP, Jaylen Brown, what he did would have gone under the radar and nobody would have cared. You know what I mean? Because, like, I was telling our brethren,
Jason Tatum, because of, like, I know the finals.
Tell him don't shoot 38%. Like, I was telling our Hot Box brethren last night, right? I was telling our Hot Box brethren last night. Yes, you can make an argument that Jason Tatum deserved the award if you're just looking at stats, you know, points, rebounds, whatever. But then when you factor in the shooting percentages, the defense that Jaylen Brown played on Luka,
Jaylen Brown had three games where he made the defensive play. So if they were even that whole game between Jaylen shooting 40-something%, but Tatum had 32 points, Jaylen Brown had the block on the dunk. He caused Luka to get 5 and 6 fouls, like number 5 and number 6. And then I think he hit the jumper when they were about to blow like a 20-point lead. He hit the jumper to stop the bleeding.
Yeah, and then in the Eastern Conference Finals, you know, game 3, I think it was, he hit Derek White for what ended up being the game winner. You know, he hit a 3 in the corner in another one of those games in the series. So that's where Pascal Siakam is the Eastern Conference Finals MVP if you're just looking at the fact that he led the team in scoring. But when you factor in the things that Halliburton was doing, putting things into motion, and Halliburton actually ended up averaging.
Yeah, well, he only had like 10 shots, less than 10 shots one game, right? I think.
That tipped the scales. And that's the problem. So that's the problem that I have with awards in general, is that people look at the last thing you did, you know, versus the collective, the total picture of what you did. And I bring that up all the time. Like, I'm sure you've heard me say this before, but I don't know if the public has. But like 1996, I take it back to 1996. You looking at stats, Michael Jordan's the finals MVP against Seattle. But when I watched that series just with a fresh perspective, no thought going into it, they don't win that series without Dennis Rodman. And you know, but he ain't going to ever have, you know, 15 points or 20 points to where it'll offset, you know, it'll go along with the 18 rebounds or whatever it is. So you got to give it to Michael Jordan. And like me and Mike, you know, we were talking about this last night because Mike is of the belief that the best player should always be the MVP. And it's like, well, sometimes the best player doesn't perform up to par. Like for me, you know, we've had this conversation. I thought that Jason Terry was the finals MVP of that series. But Dirk's the one that comes with the name, the notoriety, the former MVP.
And he hit the big shots. He became a media fan favorite when D-Wade and LeBron were mocking him coming to the stadium when he was sick. So you had that flu game-esque kind of
right,
aura around Dirk, and Dirk being Dirk. And like I said, that Miami team was supposed to win that series. Dallas should have quit when they were down 3-0.
Dallas to win that series in
real time. Dallas shouldn't even, like, in our minds, Dallas should have got beaten so bad in games 1, 2, and 3 that they forfeit game 4. Like, that's what we all were thinking. Like, they should get beat this badly. And it's like, how'd you win this series in 6?
But I know you mentioned you wanted to bring up a note about hockey as well when it comes to this subject.
And like I said, shout out to my friends out in Utah to kind of put me onto the hockey game. Hockey teams, when they win their conference, they don't touch the trophies. They all take pictures. Like, no one hoists a trophy because they want to all hoist the Stanley Cup. They want to be part of the guys that hoist the Stanley Cup, pass it around. So they don't touch the conference title trophies. And I believe there is an MVP award that's given.
There it is.
I think the Defensive Player Award. It's all kinds of awards that these hockey players, they don't pick any of them up. They want to hoist the Stanley Cup. So I think that in and of itself is like, but hockey is one of those sports where it's just, you need the whole team because it's a 60-minute game. Your star player plays like, he has like 15 to 19 minutes of ice time depending. So it's like a lot of people factor into hockey teams winning. So it's a little bit more, whereas basketball, it's a little bit more individual. Like, we talk about Jordan scoring 63 against the Celtics, who were like a stacked team. And maybe if some other people scored, you know, if they could have got 45 points from the rest of the team, along with Jordan 63, they probably would have won that game. But as an individual player in basketball, you can have a great impact. And then, that's why I like it. Because like I said, I think the award, even this year, especially with Halliburton, like throwing up the peace sign, taking a selfie with a teammate and tapping himself on the chest and then walking out, and hearing a different name is like, that's, I did that once at a promotion ceremony and I was just going to tack somebody on. And the young airman, she pointed at me and said another guy's name. Shout out to Peterson. I sent them the link. He's probably watching. She pointed at me, but said Peterson. So I'm walking down the middle.
What y'all look alike.
Yeah. People got us confused. I think we're just black tech stars at the time with low haircuts. But so I'm walking down the middle. So people see me coming up, like I'm about to tack on her stripe. And then he stands up and Eric goes, ooh. So then it was like a running joke. Even the commander walked up to me. Yeah. Like, what's up, Peterson? I'm like,
they treated you like Kevin Durant, always finishing second. And then,
I understand what Halliburton's going through, but that's his own fault for tapping his chest.
And then, of course, we got Panthers Oilers in the Stanley Cup Finals, you know, so that should be a great series. I'm going with the Panthers to bring it home. But anyway, I know in college basketball,
Connor McDavid.
In college basketball, the regionals have their MVPs, or they call them most outstanding player, you know, and then you have your overall MVP of the Final Four. That's the most outstanding player. And I don't like that award because you're the MVP of two games, and that's where somebody could just go off and hit 6 threes and be the most outstanding.
I think AD had awesome points
all year.
I think AD had like 2 points and 14 rebounds, and he
something like that, and he got it. Yeah, well, yeah, and then I don't know if he got it. Did he?
I think I believe that was the first time.
I guess he did. I thought Deron Lamb got it for some reason, but it was Anthony Davis.
When I heard the term and the numbers, I was like, I'm glad they gave it to somebody who had like, you know, but they have the right word. It's like most outstanding
player. Outstanding, yeah, not valuable. Yeah.
Like, we have all this value and everything else. Yeah.
Right.
Like I said, I like the Siakam selection. I think Halliburton having the,
I mean, yeah,
super I'm, impressive game.
Penalize him for one game, but what about the other five or six? I was talking about
the vote was 5-4.
Well, I was talking about this with somebody where the second Warriors championship with KD, you know, the second straight game 3 that Durant hit the shot over LeBron, Steph went 4 for 14 in that game. And coming into that game, they were neck and neck. But as soon as Kevin Durant hit that shot,
it was a wrap.
He's the finals MVP, like, you know what I'm saying? So I don't know. I just don't. And I hate the way that people treat finals MVP better than MVP, because MVP happened over an 82-game stretch. You know, whereas the finals happened over a week.
When you win the regular season MVP, they automatically leverage this expectation that you got to win it all. And it's like, it's still, you got to win 16 more games.
Well, SGA is the first one to make the finals since Steph in 2016.
Hell, it happens in the NFL. I think most guys don't. I think Matt Ryan made it after he won MVP, but I think Patrick Mahomes might have been like,
I'm sure Tom Brady did it 15 like, times. No, he actually didn't win that many MVPs as you would think, though.
Yeah, I think he won three or four, but like seven Super Bowls. So that means at least three of those years he won the MVP. So it's like,
he won three.
Yeah, so I just feel like I like the award at the end. I think the conference finals. Mainly, I guess, because it's new. It's new in the past couple of years. It's been, I wouldn't use the word controversy, but at least in the East, the standard is still in work.
A random question before we move on.
Yeah.
What is the narrative, or I guess, what are people's takeaways if Chet wins finals MVP?
He would have to average a triple-double with 10 blocks as part of that triple-double.
I'm just saying, man. I would love to hear the conversation.
It'd have to be 22, 12, and 10, and the 10 is 10 blocks. Because that you got to throw in at least a couple of assists. But his triple-double would have to be 22, 10, and 10, and the 10 has to be blocks. That's the way he wins the finals MVP over SGA.
Shout out to my guy, you know, Kayson Wallace, the other Kentucky Wildcat on the Oklahoma City Thunder. Let's bring home a trophy.
He ain't balling that much, Mike. Not balling. Because, like, let's say SGA is going to get about 10 to 12 free throws a game, which, you know, because he's going to have the ball in his hand.
That's a lot of free throws.
I mean, if you think about it, and ones, they're going to follow him on threes. So about 10 to 12 a game. We'll say we'll give him 10. That's probably, he's probably going to go 90% from the line. That's like 36 points over four.
Well, like I said, he's averaging 39, 8-7 against the Pacers this year. Oh, and by the way, I forgot to mention, you know what Tyrese Halliburton is averaging against OKC this year in those two games?
18.9.
11 points and 5.5 assists. Just some food for thought.
You ready for his glow up?
Just some food for thought. But before we get out of here, we wanted to talk about the thing that I've been asking for the last 2 years. It has finally happened. The New York Knickerbockers, I said Nick Kerr, did the things that I've been asking them to do. Look, Tim should have known his job was on the line the moment Karl Anthony Towns walked through that door. He just don't have good history with them. You know what I'm saying? Like Kat is the kryptonite to Tom Thibodeau. And look, this is the thing, right? I was thinking about this earlier, so just indulge me for a second. There was a coach by the name of Orlando Tubby Smith. You know, and he made his bones at Tulsa. You know, he graduated from High Point. You know, was the head coach at Tulsa, made a Sweet 16 or two, went to Georgia, made Georgia pretty good. And then he came to Kentucky, took over for the one and only Richard Pitino, you know. And, of course, he won the national title in his first season, you know, as Rick Pitino's replacement with Rick Pitino's team. And then he never won a national title again. You know, he got these people like Rondo in there that he just wouldn't play good basketball. He was going back to the 1960 four corners and all that, it seemed like at times. So then he left, went to Minnesota. They started winning games again, and people are saying, how couldn't you win at Kentucky? Because some guys are builders, and other guys are the guys that take you over the top. So when I look at a Tom Thibodeau, you know, I'm not saying that they should do this, for example, but I'm just making a point. Right. A team like Charlotte might benefit from a Tom Thibodeau from the standpoint of you're young, you don't know how to win. He's going to put high standards on you. He's not going to accept BS. He's going to hold your feet to the fire, and you build good habits. The problem is once you get to the playoffs, you're going to lose because he don't got no imagination. And that's what happened with the Knicks in this series is because the Knicks didn't have any – look, when I look at a basketball team, right, and I'm not trying to make the argument that any of these dudes are superstars or great offensive players, right, but you got OG Adonobi, Mikal Bridges, and Kat in your starting lineup, and you struggle to hit 100 points sometimes with Jalen Brunson already giving you close to 30. So this is the problem because people, and you've said it to me before, and it pisses me off even when you say it, because I always talk about Sean McDermott, and you always say, who you going to get that's better? Well, I'm here to tell you, you don't need anybody that's better. You need a different voice, B, someone who can come up with a game plan, because think about this, right? I think, I might be in the minority, I think that Brad Stevens is a very good coach. You know, they replaced him with an unknown Ime Udoka, and then made the finals. And then guess what? He got fired because he couldn't keep it in his pants, and they brought in Joe Mazzulla. And guess what? They won the title. You know, Minnesota, right, only made one Western Conference Finals in their history before this with KG. They went and got an unknown assistant, to the public at least, from Toronto, Chris Finch, who was on that championship team under Nick Nurse. He came in there, and look at him, back-to-back Western Conference Finals. So you don't necessarily need somebody that's better. You just need somebody that know what they're doing.
I hear you, yes, and I hear you, because I like when we disagree on stuff. I personally feel like I do this to my kids. When I say something as like a warning or like a precursor, it's like, listen, do this so this doesn't happen. And then they don't do it. And then a thing happens and they come to me and I'm like, what did I tell you? I said this about Minnesota when they made the move to trade Cat this last offseason. These teams get to a certain point and they think that they're better than the point that they arrived at. I believe the Knicks looked at this season as, you know what? We're better than 50 wins. We're better than an Eastern Conference Finals.
And they should be.
They are not. Look, Josh Hart, you can leave him at 23 feet all game, and he'll dribble drive into the paint. Mikal Bridges will not pull up from three. OG Anunoby, like, they have scrappy guys. They have guys who are starting that should be leading your second unit off the bench. And then right. They don't play anyone off the bench. And granted, that could be Tibbs, but it's also personnel. Their team isn't dynamic in any form or fashion. Everybody plays exactly the same. So no matter who you put on the floor, I don't have to change my defense. I don't have to worry about a third player. That is not on the coach. It's like, that's the personality he has. They gave up 4 first-round picks for Mikal Bridges when they probably could have done it for half that.
And guess what? Guess what? This offseason, Mikal Bridges is eligible for 4 years, 156.
So now that's what carry the 2, damn near 40 a year. Now, you just saw, like, listen, I'm not trying to say these guys aren't ultra-talented players. It's just that they exceeded what they, like, their expectation.
Do the Knicks,
but then when they got to that point, people felt like, oh, this is it. This is, we beat Boston. We are the team in the East to beat. And it was like, no, I called out how to stop you defensively from my gaming chair in my bedroom. You stop the pick and roll. You get Cat into silly foul trouble, and it's a wrap.
Do the Knicks need to trade him?
No, I don't.
I don't think so either. But
I don't think they need to trade him.
So this is what I've heard.
They need to get another guy on the floor that they could run the offense through It because the second unit, who's running the offense in the second unit? No one.
So what are you gonna do? So I got two thoughts on that. You know, I've been listening to some Kevin O'Connor, you know, one of my favorite, you know, podcasters out there.
Damn, Mike,
you know, fuck him. And what he proposed was, and I know you're going to laugh at this, but I'm going to just go ahead and say what he proposed, because I don't think they should do it. So I'm going to just he proposed, why don't you bring in KD and someone else for Cat, and Cat can go play with his college teammate, Devin Booker. I don't like that on any level.
What is these pundits playing fantasy basketball in real life?
KD gives them a chance to talk about a star.
You see this? KD is old. You can't just be trying to rebuild with old parts. Like, I'm not, but it's like KD needs to finish out somewhere where he can probably be the sixth man. But like, you can't build. The New York Knicks, just like, and I'm like, I love New York City. I love it. I love the city.
That makes one of us.
I love going there. It's one of my favorite cities on earth. But New York might be the most pretentious place on earth.
That makes two of us.
It matriculates through everything that they do. Case in point, I have a friend of mine that's a chef. He is connected to people. He took another friend of ours, the friend I met through. They went to a party a few years back in New York City. It was like a Tuesday night. It was $400 to get in. If you didn't know the password, this is a Tuesday night. And I think the city is dope, but the gall to be like, I'm charging $400 for people to get in here, and people line up to pay this $400. That's what the Knicks are. The Knicks think there are $400 Tuesday night kind of, you should want to be here because we're the New York Knicks. It's like, you guys haven't built a quality team that's been to the Eastern Conference Finals since 2000. Cat just left Minnesota. He was in the Western Conference Finals last year, and then that same team went back to the Western Conference Finals. Hell, even the Lakers, with all the ups and downs they've gone through, they were in the Western Conference Finals a couple years ago. Mm-hmm. Dallas took, you know, like all these other teams are making these moves, even though it's like up and down. The Knicks were like the poster child for mediocrity for so long that this current success, I think, got to their heads. And shout out to Nick Wright. I want to give him credit for this. He said, you know what? You don't really have that much time to think about it because it just happened today. But he was like, my immediate thought was they were going to get rid of Tibbs no matter what, short of an NBA Finals victory.
As they should. I would have fired him even if they won the title.
He said it was very similar to Mike Malone because they probably already had their mind made up. They're getting rid of the GM and the coach. I don't want a miracle playoff run to influence us, which is fine. All I'm saying is that they haven't had a history of successful basketball operations, even with some legends at the helm. They had Phil Jackson and Isaiah Thomas in their organization. Derek Fisher won a bunch of championships. They've had championship guys from other organizations come to their organization and look like garbage. So it's like, you have to understand it is not on Tibbs, and you haven't really had a history of making the right decision. So if they outsource the hiring to maybe some analytics firm out of MIT, I already know who they should hire.
They should hire Johnny Bryant. You know, first of all, go Utes. You know what I'm saying? He's the all-time Utah Ute three-point percentage leader. You know, he was actually the associate head coach for Tom Thibodeau the last 4 years before he went to Cleveland under Kenny Atkinson this year. So, you know, and of course, go Jazz. You know, he started out with the Utah Jazz, coaching the Jazz. So you know, there's young dudes out here, young minds out here that, yes, there's a very good chance that you may not hire a coach that would be.
They're gonna hire the wrong coach.
That would be.
they're gonna hire a guy that feel embodies the gritty.
They should hire? They should hire Patrick Ewing.
I feel like they're gonna
get something.
Like I said, if they don't outsource the hiring, because they haven't really done a great job of. Phil Jackson should have never worked for the Knicks.
That man,
short of his time back in the 60s and the 70s when he was a player, should have never come back for $13 million a year. Like, that's the kind of stuff that the Knicks do. And I have a feeling that that's going to be a new thing. For instance, I heard the name that someone threw out there, Jay Wright, because he coaches guys at Villanova. Mm-hmm. If you go to Jay Wright and want to get him back into coaching, you're going to give him more than, I don't want to say he's worth. You're going to give him more just because you're going to have to sweeten the pot to get this man to come out of retirement.
Hey, he's a championship coach, something that Tibbs can't say.
Yeah, but you're going to give him this, and then you're going to have to pay all these guys. They're lucky. They're lucky that Jalen Brunson took a team-friendly deal.
He ain't going to take one next time.
Well, he's got a couple years for that, at least. Whole next season.
Well, this is my problem. So everybody, because I saw that article that came out, like, I don't know how long they were sitting on that story. I don't know how long they were sitting but about Cat and how he was blowing the defense and Tibbs was frustrated with him because he was missing assignments and doing the wrong things. Like, I'm talking about the clock hit 000.
And they dropped the story.
That article probably dropped within a half hour of that game ending. Like, you know, so somebody was trying to get the point out real quick. Maybe it was somebody in Tibbs' camp that was like, let's shit on Cat so you can keep your job. I don't know. But when I look at this, this is what I came up with. Because, you know, 2-5 shit. A lot of people are talking about how they need to move off Cat. I think they need to move off Jalen Brunson. The problem is you can't. You know what I'm saying? You got his dad on the coaching staff. You got his Villanova buddies and you already traded.
Either guy. I don't think either guy was the problem. I just think that you
can't win with these little dudes no more.
You could if you could put them on the bench and put somebody else like a Tyus Jones in the running second unit. That was the problem. The problem was they never developed a second unit. None of those guys played with enough confidence. Jalen Brunson is undersized, and he plays with a level of confidence that none of the other players can match.
But it's not even
a talent thing.
It's not just that, though. It's the fact that you have to depend on both of them to play decent defense for you to be successful long-term. And to your point, Mike, about Josh Hart, I think Josh Hart is one of those guys that you want on a championship team. Like, he's one of those gritty go-getter, ain't afraid of the moment, will do whatever you ask him to do and not complain about it, guys. Like, you need guys on like that on your team. I think the move is move Bridges and get some bench pieces out of it and some draft picks. You know,
I'd move Anunoby.
Because Anunoby might have the most value of between him and Bridges, for sure. You know what I mean? But I think that the thing is that when I look at it, they brought in Landry Shamet and Deuce McBride, and they dusted off DeLon Wright during this series. You need to upgrade that. Like, not necessarily Deuce. I like Deuce. But
if they would have been playing in January, February, and March, he could – in those games where Jalen Brunson had two fouls early in the second, if you were playing Landry Shamet all year long and you were playing Deuce McBride all year long, because that guy was ready to get a bucket, when Jalen Brunson picks up foul number two early in the second – and it's just rest time anyway, you can pull him and put in McBride, put in Shamet, maybe take Bridges out and go McBride, Shamet, OG, Cat, and somebody else is in there in the lineup. And then you run through them. And then when Cat inevitably picks up his second foul, you bring in Mitchell Robinson. You still get your offense from OG, Shamet, and McBride. You still get your scoring from there. And then you get these guys simultaneous rest because you knew everything goes to those two guys.
Why they got so many guards?
Because they, I think he wants to be fast on defense. You
know, Shamit, right in the, hand, in the campaign.
But campaign, campaign. Once they realized, you know what, I can not play camp because campaign didn't. He never saw a shot he didn't like, and he had 14 in that game against Boston, and it was like, oh, that's crazy. Then I think he just kind of tapered off after that. But once again, if these guys are getting run early in the year and you establish a real second unit, you'll be fine. But I don't know, because we talked about this before. It's like, I want to know who's on the Knicks staff that coordinates the offense, because we all know as fans that Tibbs doesn't do it. So if you're an organization and you know you have a defensive-minded head coach, someone has to be the voice of offense. Someone has to be, I don't know if basketball has an offensive coordinator type title, but someone has to have that, hey, Tibbs, I think we can go 10 deep if we go small ball with Cat at the five with these four guys, or we go with Princess Achiuwa and Mitchell Robinson and we just rebound and we get these guys who are like, who like to shoot. Like, someone has to come up with something different. And I think the fact that they didn't do that until game three, when I see Shamit finally out there, I was like, okay, then they're finally switching up. That has to happen in March.
Their assistant coaches are Daniel Brady, Rick Brunson, Mark Bryant, Mo Cheeks, Darren Erman, Andy Greer, and how about this name? You ready for this name? Othella Harrington.
So no, not a lot of former head coaches on the bench.
Just Mo Cheeks. You know what I'm saying? He was a point guard. You know, one of the best point guards in NBA history, actually.
That's a structure problem. So if they went this whole time, and we as fans can see that offensively you are limited, and then you don't have a single person on your coaching staff that's known for being an offensive-minded head coach, that's where you're wrong, and that's the Knicks.
Right.
So
but
you're going to hire a young guy like J.J. Redick in L.A. Look at his bench. Like Nate McMillan. I think probably like used to coach, I believe, in OKC. It was a few head coaches on former head coaches on the Lakers staff this year with J.J. Redick as a new head coach. How come Tibbs doesn't have
any? They had what's his name? Nate Robinson, Nate McMillan.
Yeah, Nate McMillan. They had another guy, Scott, I believe. Scotty Brooks. They had a few familiar head coaching faces out there wearing the all black with the dunks,
right?
You know, at their games. So it's like but sometimes you have to set up that way.
If you're the Knicks, you might be tempted to run it back too, because we've been talking about this for a couple of weeks now. Jason Tatum's out next year. You know, you got Indiana, obviously, you know, sitting at the top. You know, is Giannis going to be in Milwaukee? And even if he is, what's going to be there with him? You know, you got Orlando still needs to find a guard, and they're allegedly talking about getting Darius Garland. You know, then you got Cleveland. What are they going to look like next year? Are they going to be the same? Are they going to have the same parts, if you will? You know, so if you're the Knicks, you might be tempted to say, if I could get a coach in here that just knows 70% of offense, we might be a lot better and, you know, a viable threat and get some.
I just know that your point guard that is somewhat of a defensive liability and tends to dribble the ball a lot and burns a lot of energy might need that break at the, so you get 12 minutes in the first quarter, say he plays all 12, you need somebody that can come in the game until 7:30 is left in the second. Like, simply solving that piece saves them in this series, because he picked up like 3 and 4 fouls, and then he was sitting out a long time, and Cat had to go ape in game 3 to bring them back. But realistically, if they play Cat, if Cat doesn't knock down a couple of those threes, they're down 3-0 because of Jalen Brunson's foul trouble. You had to keep them in the game because you don't have another guy that runs the offense or whatever the offense is.
How many Giannis to the Knicks comments am I going to hear this week?
You kind of hear a lot, but realistically, if you're looking at it, it's like, unless Milwaukee's taking Cat, but if you're Giannis, like, Carmelo Anthony should be the cautionary tale for everybody. In order to move a superstar to a team when maybe his camp says he only wants to go to New York, you take all the leverage away from the team you're going to, and then the team that you're leaving is going to fleece them for everything that they can. They're going to squeeze every drop of blood out of stone that they can. So I don't think Giannis to New York is a thing. I don't know if Orlando can do it. I don't know how the money works, but you're probably better off going to a team that's younger that you can come in and be the alpha, and then everyone kind of comes along with you.
Adam Silver, cut the bullshit. If this is rigged, get me Trae Young and Giannis in Brooklyn. That's all I'm saying.
They got the capital. Brooklyn has the capital.
That's what I'm saying. Make it happen.
But they would have to like get some surprises from certain players. Like, some players would have to play out of their current space for that to work, because they're gonna lose a lot making that move.
But, yeah, in 22 days, we got the NBA draft, so it's gonna start heating up, because I think this is gonna be a hot summer, if you will. Not just because I ain't got no AC right now, but it's gonna be a hot summer in these NBA streets.
I think it's gonna be standard, because the guys are making too much money. I don't think it's gonna be that much movement.
Could the Brooklyn Nets go get Demetrius?
Nah.
I just don't.
Like I said, I think this NBA Finals is showing teams there's an easier, more sustainable way to success versus trying to microwave a championship, because it hasn't worked since James Harden, KD, and Kyrie went to Brooklyn. That style, KD going to Golden State was the last time it worked. Unless I'm missing something.
Kawhi
went to LA.
No, Toronto.
Toronto. Well, that was a one. It wasn't like a crazy. He wasn't like a crazy free agent. He wanted out of San Antonio. They had a bad relationship. They sent him to oblivion.
Shout out to Uncle Dennis.
He didn't go up there with Trae Young and like microwave this team. He went up there to a team that was established.
He went up there with all-time great Kyle Lowry.
Yeah, and they got rid of DeMar DeRozan. So they had a good team. So it was like a one-for-one swap.
Yeah.
But as far as like you getting these two stars together, because all of these stars that we are thinking of, like the top 15 guys that you can run off the top of your head, you know, your Trae Young, Steph, KD, Booker, LeBron, Luke, all these guys, they're getting long in the tooth, and they're getting, their money is crazy. Some of these contracts are $55, $60 million.
Mm-hmm.
Getting a KD and a Trae Young together to go to Brooklyn, you got to deplete your team, and now you have these two guys that are eating up 65, 70% of your cap. You're in the luxury tax. You're in the apron. And now one of them is out for 2 weeks with a hamstring, and those 8 games, you go 1-7. That was like, what's the point? Why do we do all this?
For sure.
So, yeah, I think the microwave championship team died when James Harden forced his way out of Houston to Brooklyn, and it didn't work. I think teams should shy away from it, because it didn't work with Dame and Giannis either. Trying to just put two heads together.
Yeah.
It didn't work with Luka and LeBron. Luka and LeBron on the same team didn't get out of the first round.
Well, I mean, it was only 1 year. I get it, but it wasn't even a full year.
But just think about like the two names you're putting there. Like those two names on the team.
I think that's the problem, is that people are looking at names and not teams. And
that's what I'm saying.
That's why I told you I was having that argument because
that's what you're going to end up with. You're going to end up with, like, the Lakers got the best possible deal, and everyone hated it, and no one's going to make another deal like it. Because it was It felt like an inside job. Well, it was that bad. It was like inside trading.
I was arguing with somebody a few weeks ago because they tried to tell me that the Suns were a big three. And I was like, yeah, if you're just looking at names.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? But if you actually look at them as players and how they fit or don't fit together, not even close. They might not even be a big two. Yeah,
three names and like nine G League guys.
Yeah, they might not even be a big two for real. But, you know, that's just the way that it is. So, hey, we will be back on Thursday, not Friday this week, on Thursday. Because, you know, we got some engagements on Friday. So, you know, until then. Y'all be good. Stay up. Get ready for some finals. Tell your friends that don't want to watch the finals because of the small market teams to shut the fuck up and keep it to themselves. And let us enjoy our basketball.
Give a personal shout out to New Jersey artist Melanie Tefalitis. Tesla Vitas, sorry, for this wonderful painting. So, Melanie, thank you for the painting. And I said, you know, you got to give a shout out to people. You know, we got to spread love around here.
Shout out to the One Mic Podcast. Check that out on Mondays and Thursdays at noon.
Shout out Solutions Over Excuses.
Solutions Over Excuses. Shout out to my guy, Styrofoam Ralph, Cups in the Gang, a.k.a. The Hot Box. Sunday, shout Monday.
Liquid Death be in the building. Friday,
7 o'clock Eastern. And then, of course, for you lovebirds out there that might be going through a little something, or you lovebirds that are still in love but just want some new techniques, holla at the Pursuit of Forever every other Wednesday at 6:30.
Mr. Beast, we're available. Holla at us. I mean, we're available.
Yeah, I don't know about all that, but
we're available, Mr. Beast. Yeah, I don't know about all that. Briefcases. You get one of them briefcases.
But grab you a Liquid Death and like, review, subscribe, share, rate, do all those free things, do all of those damn good things. He is the world famous, the world renowned, Mr. Logical. Don't bring feelings to a fact fight.
Don't do it.
And then, of course, it is I, the non-RG3, no matter what you try to put on me. We love you. See you in a few days. Peace.